From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Chicago voters have narrowed the race for mayor down to two choices.
What a night of surprises. Daly out, but Preckwinkle and Lightfoot, historically, this is historic, they're in.
Any way you slice it, these results amount to a stunning upset by Lori Lightfoot, a victory almost no one saw coming, and few believed that she could pull off.
What a night. Thank you so much. So what do you think of us now?
With the runoff less than 5 weeks away, they don't have a lot of time to broaden their bases of support.
The underdog versus the party boss, and now voters will have a little over 4 weeks to decide.
It's been a long night in a hard-fought campaign. Our fight is far from over, and there's a lot more work to do.
I congratulate Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot on their victories. One of them will have the honor of being the next mayor of Chicago.
Bill Daly failing to carry on the family name in Chicago mayoral politics as Tony Preckwinkle and Lori Lightfoot emerge from the primary election. The Chicago City Mayor's race is the biggest news in state politics and any politics in Illinois this week. So that is what we are going to be talking about on State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Sean Crawford and Daisy Contreras are away. Joining us, as always, here in the studios of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. And on the line from Chicago is Claudia Morell, who covers Chicago city politics for public radio station WBEZ. Welcome, Claudia. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
So just can you give us a broad overview of the outcome? Was this, as we heard one of the TV news people saying at the beginning, a surprise result in the election?
Yeah, with a crowd of 14 candidates, I think that no one knew how Tuesday night was going to turn out. And if you had a poll of it being two of the African-American women who were in the race, I don't think that a lot of people would have bet on that outcome. And so in that sense, it is a very surprising result, especially having a Daly in the mayor's race. So it's the first time that we've ever heard a Daly give a concession speech in Chicago.
Yeah, that's a great point. So who, maybe we can just talk a little bit about who these candidates are. So the top vote getter, Lori Lightfoot, what's her background?
So Lori Lightfoot is a former federal prosecutor, and more recently she was appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel in 2015 to head the city's police board. And she then resigned from that seat back in 2018, right before she announced her run for mayor. And then we have Tony Preckwinkle, who is the Cook County Board President and the chairman of the Cook County Democratic Party, which was once, you know, the epicenter of the Chicago machine. But since the Shachtman Decree and all those rules about how you can't give your political hires jobs in city government, it's, as some aldermen have said, on life support. So we have these two women who are pretty embedded in City Hall, but ran on very similar platforms of, you know, Chicago being a tale of two cities where the loop is prioritized over the neighborhoods. Police reform was a huge issue, especially with Lori Lightfoot. She also headed Mayor Rahm Emanuel's Police Accountability Task Force. That was the task force he created right after the courts forced him to release the Laquan McDonald video. That's the one with Officer Jason Van Dyke shooting the black teenager 16 times. Mm-hmm. And in that report, she, you know, detailed a pattern and practice of racial bias in the Chicago Police Department. And it was an issue that she really talked a lot about on the campaign trail. And same with Tony Preckwinkle. I mean, one of her biggest ads was her boasting about how it was because of her that video was even released in the first place.
And so we have here two candidates who sort of fancy themselves, or maybe that's not the most polite way to put it, who are styling themselves as the outsiders, right? Although, as you said, they both have connections either in elective office or through their appointments to City Hall.
Yeah, absolutely. And also there's this growing tension between the two about, you know, who's the real progressive and, you know, will the real progressive please stand up? In the sense that, you know, Preckwinkle is saying that she has always been a progressive. She fought the machine from the very start. Loves telling the story about how she ran for alderman three times before she was finally elected, and how she, you know, did a lot of hard work to rise up in the ranks and to get to the position that she has as the chairman of the Democratic Party. She mentions that she was one of the few aldermen who voted against Mayor Richard M. Daley's parking meter deal, which is one of those votes that the city council is still feeling the repercussions of. And then we have Lori Lightfoot saying that, well, how can Tony Preckwinkle be a true progressive if she endorsed Cook County Assessor Joe Berrios when he tried to do his reelection in light of all the news that was coming out about the really unfair property tax system in Cook County. And so I anticipate to see a lot more of that in terms of, you know, both of them trying to hone in on their progressive credentials.
Yeah. And of course, if she is the chairwoman of the Cook County Democratic Party, that's not exactly a position where you can say you're an outsider anymore. Charlie, it strikes me that was the position that Mayor Daley used to hold way back when. Charlie, are you surprised that we heard a concession speech from a Daley in a Chicago mayoral campaign?
Well, it was certainly historical. I think what I found, what would you say, most heartening is that no matter how it shakes out, Chicago will have its second elected black mayor and its second elected woman mayor. And I think that's a good sign.
Yeah. So it's
I think it's a wide open race, because if you look at the results, 5 out of 6 voters who chose to come to the polls voted for somebody other than Tony Preckwinkle. 5 out of 6 voted for somebody other than Lori Lightfoot. 2/3 didn't vote for either of them, and 2/3 didn't even show up of the electorate.
Turnout is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it's just wide open, and it's going to be up to the two candidates to try and go beyond their 17, 18, 16% of the people who chose to vote, which I guess out of the electorate, if you divide it by 3, maybe 5% of the adult citizens in Cook County voted for them, to try and win over those other people who voted for, you know, other candidates. Dr. Willie Wilson had a very strong showing in the Afro-American wards, for example. Will he endorse someone? If so, whom? What impact might that have? Susana Mendoza and Gary Chico did very well in the Hispanic wards. Will they endorse someone? What impact will they have? So I think this thing is just wide open.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the turnout. Claudia, you mentioned, or Charlie mentioned, that it was, about a third of voters in Chicago who showed up. Claudia, do we have any sense as to why that is, or what does that say about this field, perhaps?
I don't know if we know why it is, but I thought it was particularly interesting given the huge turnout we had in 2018 for the gubernatorial and the midterm elections, and then also with Amara Enya and Chance and the Kanye West factor, and how they were really hammering on the point that they were going to get millennials to show up and new time voters, and they just really didn't show up to the polls on Tuesday. I mean, from what I saw from the returns from the Chicago Board of Elections, a majority of the voters that showed up were in the 40 to 60 age range. So, I mean, it could mean that people just thought that maybe we'll just vote in the runoff. I mean, in 2015, we saw a huge spike in turnout in the runoff compared to the general. So I think that we could see the same again this time around in April.
And just for people who aren't as familiar with the election system there, can you just give a brief overview of how the primary and the runoff work in this election?
Yeah, so in Chicago, we don't have partisan primaries. We stopped doing that back in 1996. So we just have a nonpartisan general election in February. And then to win outright, you need to get a majority of the vote, so over 50%. And if none of the candidates make that threshold, then the top two go into a runoff, which is on April 2nd.
So Charlie mentioned some of the other candidates who did not do as well. Maybe they did well in individual areas of the city or with certain ethnic blocks. But I'm just wondering if we can go down the list of some of the people who, you know, were considered in the top tier at one point. What do we know about, or what do we think we know about why Daley lost? I've heard accusations that the Jerry Joyce family, Jerry Joyce's campaign and really his family has had sort of a feud with the Daleys going back now over some O'Hare concessions.
Jerry Joyce, he did pretty well in the northwest side and the southwest side areas of the city. And by southwest side, I mean like Beverly and the northwest side around O'Hare. And the Daley camp, at least Daley supporters, were arguing that the total votes that he got would have covered the spread between him and Tony. And so that it was Jerry who led to Daley coming in third.
Kind of
whether or not
spoiler.
That's true, is...
Well, it occurs to me that, this has been framed as kind of the battle between the B's on the southwest side, Bridgeport and Beverly, Bridgeport being the 11th ward, Beverly being the 19th ward. But it occurs to me that Joyce also beat Daley up on the northwest side, where the folks are not, what would you say, particularly aligned with the southwest side Democratic machine. Daley was the only one who came out strongly for trying to revise the pensions of the Chicago municipal workers to try and save money by reducing benefits to the police and firefighters. And there are a lot of police and firefighters who live in those wards. And so it would seem to me that more than some internecine feud among, Democratic warlords, so to speak, the threat to their pension rights might have been more significant in determining how police and firefighters voted in those wards.
Yeah, absolutely. And also Daley's brother, Mayor Richard M. Daley, is partially the reason why their pension system is so bad and underfunded from years of, not making the required pension payments. And so that could be another issue with then when Mayor Rahm Emanuel increased the property taxes and the water and sewer fees and added the garbage tax, that a lot of these pensioners feel like they're getting taxed twice, where, they're paying higher property taxes and that money is going into their own pensions. And they're saying, we're already making our pension payments. And so it will be interesting to see who can rally the public sector unions.
And as a historic note, there's a certain irony in all that, because Joyce's dad, Jeremiah Joyce, and Daley's brother, Richard M. Daley, were very close when they were both in the state Senate. And Jeremiah was an advisor to Richie back in the day.
But how times change. So,
it's new generation.
Continuing down the list of unsuccessful candidates, Susana Mendoza. I think a lot of people saw her as somebody who's an up-and-comer. She certainly has raised her profile a lot in the last couple of years, particularly in the last 2 years of Governor Bruce Rauner's administration, sticking it to him and a number of good government initiatives she raised statewide. And she did very well in the statewide election, but she finished, fifth, I think, overall in this?
Yeah, I think that that the reason why her campaign kind of plateaued or, kind of remained at the same level from when she announced was that I think that a lot of voters weren't happy with the fact that she was very coy about running when Emanuel announced that he wasn't going to be running for a third term, and she was in the middle of her statewide comptroller race. And then when that video leaked of her mayoral ad campaign before the statewide election, that probably didn't help her either. She did pretty well in a few of the Hispanic wards, and before the election, she was polling pretty high. But I think a lot of that, like with Daley, had to do more with name recognition than policy.
Do you think her ties to Ed Burke hurt her also?
Oh, for sure. I think Ed Burke was also like the wild card in this election. And, you know, like Paul Vallis would say, the Burke Four, where he was really hammering on Mendoza's ties to him because she is a product of his Southwest Side organization. And then Tony Preckwinkle's affiliations with him because she hired his son. And then Jerry Chico's affiliations with him because he is from also that area around Back of the Yards. And has worked with Ed Burke.
And then you did mention there, though, Paul Vallis, right? This is somebody who I think is a near and dear to the heart of a lot of people who are, you know, sort of enjoy white papers and sort of the very...
yeah, you could call us nerds.
Nerds, yes. Yeah. All right. I mean, this is a guy who used to be the head of the state budget office. He's the head of the Chicago Public Schools for a long time. Charlie, you have been somebody who's spoken positively about Vallis in other contexts on the show over the years.
Oh, yeah. I would say that, you know, I'm considered somebody who maybe pays more attention to the budgets and revenue than a lot of other people. I owe that in part to Paul Vallis, who many, many years ago when he was the staff guy for the Senate Revenue Committee under Don Clark Netsch, the chair, was kind enough to take time out to explain to a pretty dumb reporter what all this stuff was about.
But that just was not enough to catch fire with the voters in Chicago, it seems.
No, he's not what you would call a charismatic person.
I wonder, Claudia, was there a path for any of these? You know, it was such a crowded field. Like people like McCarthy, for example, right? The former Chicago police superintendent who was kind of, some would say, thrown under the bus by Rahm Emanuel after the Laquan McDonald video came out. I mean, was there a legit or a realistic path to victory for any of them? Do we have a sense of why they were staying in the race?
Well, I mean, Gary McCarthy was the first candidate to announce. So I assume that maybe he didn't realize that, you know, 13 others were going to join him in the election. And maybe that would have changed his mind. But with such a crowded race, I don't think that there really was a path to victory for anyone, especially when you factor in the city's, you know, racial and racial voting blocks and segregated neighborhoods, that building this kind of citywide coalition is pretty hard work. And we even saw from the results of Lightfoot and Preckwinkle, where Lightfoot didn't win a single black ward and did very well in the white wards of the lakefront and the north side, while Tony Preckwinkle did very well on the south side. And so it will be interesting to see how those two try to garner the northwest side areas, the predominantly Hispanic wards.
Yeah. One other thing that we always talk about with elections is the factor of money. And I wonder how did money play a role, if it did, in this outcome?
Well, Bill Daley definitely out-fundraised all of the candidates, especially getting the $2 million from Ken Griffin and a lot of other real estate and development types. But, you know, a lot of the business groups kind of stayed out of the fray. Like the retailers only put money in the ward races, and the small business groups only put money in the ward races. And so it will be interesting to see who will be able to garner that money and use that for the runoff.
I wondered, about the Ken Griffin donation, I thought it was interesting that Daley in his concession speech actually thanked Ken Griffin by name.
Yeah.
And that's someone in a city where Bruce Rauner was so unpopular and Ken Griffin is so tightly linked with Bruce Rauner. I wondered about the wisdom of that, you know. I mean, I guess it's after the fact. What can you do? But just, you know, if that hurt him almost as much as it helped.
Well, maybe it suggests that he's not planning on running for anything again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was interesting that he thanked him in the same breath as thanking the Plumbers Union, which is a very strong Democratic organization here in Chicago.
Strange bedfellows, I guess. So what happens next? Do we have a sense of what the main issues are going to be? I've heard a suggestion, that by having two, Chicago obviously has a history of divisive racial politics, but you have two African-American women now who are going to be competing, that almost takes that issue off the table in a sense. Does that sound like a reasonable analysis, or is this still a factor?
Yeah,
Charlie, do you want to take a stab at that?
I would think it would certainly lessen the impact of the racial identification in the city, because you look back and I don't live in Chicago anymore, when Chicago elected its first black mayor, Harold Washington, there was racism pervaded that whole situation. Washington won the Democratic primary. A guy named Bernie Epton, who had been a state rep, was the Republican candidate, and the advertising was really cruel. It was vote for Epton before it's too late, that kind of stuff. And when Washington was elected, a majority of the city council was in the white ethnic camp, led by a guy named Ed Verdoliak, and another guy who was very active in it was a guy named Ed Burke. And for the first couple of years of Washington's time in office, they bent over backwards to try and block everything he tried to do. They even had legislation introduced here in Springfield that would strip powers from the Chicago mayor and give them to the city council. Now, Mike Madigan killed all that stuff. He didn't want council wars down here. But I'm thinking with two black female candidates, that level of racial animosity is not going to be present.
Yeah, it does. But as you said earlier, it's an interesting question because I've seen reporting that neither of those candidates won or did all that well in a lot of the predominantly black boards, as we said. Willie Wilson.
Yeah, I think Wilson won all the predominantly black ones, didn't he?
I think so. And so last I saw is that he was willing to meet with the candidates and considering an endorsement, but hadn't sort of made any decision yet. Well, Charlie, you mentioned...
I saw a quote somewhere, and I apologize, I don't remember where he was reportedly said that whichever one he endorsed would be the next mayor.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
so he's a kingmaker. I guess you would say a queenmaker.
Yeah. Thinks he is anyway. We'll see. Charlie, you just mentioned Ed Burke and Claudia. He survived, I think, surprising a lot of people. A federal indictment is not enough to cost or even get someone into a runoff necessarily in a Chicago aldermanic campaign.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable that he won outright. And I was listening to some of the tape of one of the reporters who went to cover that race. And Burke spent election night in his ward office and then tried to sneak out the back door and then just got attacked by all these reporters that were trying to get his take on, you know, how he won. And they were like, how could you... how are you able to succeed given, you know, everything going on? I mean, he was the poster child for everything that was wrong at City Hall for the mayor's race. I mean, in every debate, Ed Burke's affiliations came up. And he said, well, I did what I've been doing for the past 50 years, you know, boots on the ground, canvassing. And I mean, I know that he probably worked a lot harder than he has in decades, probably. But I don't think a lot of people thought that he was going to win outright. And it's interesting that the two other candidates, including one that was endorsed by Jesus Chuy Garcia, didn't do as well as had been predicted, especially given that Garcia was able to orchestrate the demise of Burke's brother, Dan Burke, in the state legislature.
Well, and Burke won with, what, about 55% of the vote, Claudia?
Yeah, 55.
Yeah. It seems like one thing we know for certain is that there are going to be a lot of new faces, or there are at least a good chance that there's going to be a lot of new faces in the city council coming up.
Oh, for sure. Three aldermen lost outright on election day, and there are about 10 who will be fighting again in the runoff. And these are aldermen who've been on the city council for a long time, like Pat O'Connor, who's been there since 1983, Alderman Ariel Roboiris, who's been there in the 90s, who was propped up by the Hispanic Democratic Organization. We even have Leslie Harrison, who is a big progressive reformer and who represents Jackson Park, where the Obama Presidential Center is going to be built. And she couldn't even get 50% of the vote and is going to be in a runoff with Will Calloway, the activist who is the reason why we all know about the Laquan McDonald video.
Interesting. So beyond the candidates themselves, are there any other winners and losers of this election? I think we talked earlier about Chance the Rapper and Kanye West, and I guess this idea of putting out, getting millennials to the polls through celebrities did not work out as people had thought in those camps. Anyone else springs to mind? I wonder about the downtown business community, for example, or other politicians. You mentioned Chuy Garcia.
Well, I think Garcia did not do as well as people might have expected, considering the success he had in the statewide elections. And it occurs to me that in terms of newspaper endorsements, the Sun-Times endorsed Lightfoot, so they look good in retrospect. Tribune endorsed Daly, and so they don't look good. And a lot of the aldermanic candidates that they endorsed also lost. And part of it, I think, is that the Tribune has been very consistent in arguing that what the state and, by extension, local governments need to do to right their finances is to cut back on benefits for pensioners, current employees, and, if possible, people who've already retired. And that doesn't sit well, as I said earlier, in a city where you have a lot of public employees working. And so that was something that contributed to I believe, to Bill Daley's defeat. And I think that the Tribune didn't do very well in terms of its endorsements.
Hmm. Any final thoughts, Claudia? Is there one thing you'll be looking for you think will be a big factor in the coming weeks of the campaign ahead?
Yeah, I'm going to be looking for where the money lines up, especially from the business side, if it's going to go to Lightfoot or Preckwinkle, if Preckwinkle is going to be able to get the trifecta of the unions. So she's got SEIU, the service, she's got CTU, the teachers, and I'd like to see who the building trades go after or who they support because, you know, they come with a lot of money. And I will be looking for Jesus Chuy Garcia now that he is in Congress and represents a congressional district that spans every Hispanic ward in Chicago, you know, who he backs. And if the Lakefront decides in a race between Preckwinkle and Lightfoot, if they're still going to go for Lightfoot or if they prefer Preckwinkle.
All right. Well, Claudia, thanks so much for coming on the show this week.
Thank you.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Claudia Morrell of WBEZ. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org or on the NPR One app. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.